You're listening to the Overeaters Anonymous Mid-Peninsula podcast. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. For more information, please visit oamidpeninsula.org.
My name is Terrell. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I will qualify. My top weight's around 325 pounds, and I have 44 years of abstinence. Can everyone see that now?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. That's me and in high school. My top weight's around 325. The bottom picture is when I was about 22, and I felt just as fat in both pictures. So it doesn't make any difference. I was probably about 160 pounds in that picture. Anyway, let's see. I got to tell you what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. I was born to an alcoholic family. The ism is what we called it. Drug addiction, alcoholism, so forth. And there was chaos. I was shipped off to in 1959, I was born in Oklahoma, but I was shipped to California to live with my grandmother because my parents were getting a divorce, and I felt different in California. I felt different in Oklahoma, but I wasn't getting aware until California when I had an accent, and Okies were still kind of Okies back then. And I didn't have any friends, and there I was in this new strange environment, and I had a fudgesicle, and it lit up my life. You know, it just made life good. What can I say? It made life good. Can I talk about specific foods? I'm not familiar with this meeting. Okay, cool. I always say if I can't mention specific food, like if me mentioning specific food makes you crazy, you must go eat it. Well, you know, that means you're in the right place. It also means that you didn't call your sponsor and complain that the speaker talked about food so much. Because, you know, if you go and blame me because you broke your absence, no. Anyway, I discovered fudgesicle, and I, as an addict, I knew that that's what I wanted to repeat to take the edge off, to calm me down, to deal with the chaos. I was wall-eyed, which means my eyes weren't this way as a kid. So I'd get right in front of the TV and I'd eat, and I caught menage a trois of TV food in me. I got my eyes fixed, but I still would get right in front of the TV. And, cause it was like, it made me zoned out what was going on, the drunkenness, the yelling, the fighting, the knockdown, drag out, you know. I mean, there was physical violence in the house, right? My stepfathers would say, you know, you and your fat ass kids can shove it up your ass and get out of my house and stuff like that. So it wasn't a real pleasant household, right? And so I discovered food, and I would like grab some dried spaghetti from the pantry and run into the bathroom and eat it. And that's how I cope with my feelings, you know, eating dried spaghetti in the bathroom. I don't know if that makes sense to anyone else here, but that seemed to work. What happened was, I wanted to kill myself on a daily basis. I was not happy. I was miserable, you know. It was the 70s, so I was wearing corduroys, and the chafing between the legs was, I'd have holes like in my crotch. So when I was at school, I had to make sure I didn't open my legs very far, all that stuff. And being picked on, I was called Terrell the Barrel, in school. And, one day, my stepfather was berating me one time. Let's say, going like, "You don't have any kid. You don't have any friends. Why don't you get out of this house? Stop watching TV." And I said I might lose some weight. And I said if I could, I would, but I can't. Just can't, because I was told the best exercise, the best diet is the best exercise to push yourself away from the table. Like, but that doesn't really help a compulsive eater who's using food to solve their problems, to calm them. That's a nice idea if you go like, well, I want to have too many calories. I'll just push myself away from the table. I said that to him, and then I wound up in an Overeaters Anonymous meeting. They had gone to AA, so I must have found out about OA through them. And this was in 1973. I went to my first OA meeting. I was 17 years old. And this man got up and said that he had lost 100 pounds, and which gave me something that I didn't have before in my life, which was hope that my life would get better. I like to tell the story that literally when I thought about going to OA, it's like I'm going to graduate from high school. I wasted 4 years of high school by being fat. I'm going to go off to college. I'm going to waste the 4 years of college by being fat. And I'm going to waste the rest of my life by being fat. And that's a compulsive eater thinking, is that my life is wasted based upon my body size. And so it gave me that hope that, okay, yes, maybe my life can change. You suggested the steps. They were for my sick alcoholic parents. You talk about God. I prayed to God to, I'd say, God, please, when I wake up, let me be thin. And I was the same weight. I went to, I woke up the same weight I went to bed as. I said, God, please let my parents stop drinking and fighting. They kept drinking and fighting. I mean, they did go to AA, but, and not my time plan, but my not my time plan. So I couldn't really, and I figured out it like at 17, 16 years old or whatever, that the reason that God was not answering my prayers was because I was such a horrible person. I was a horrible kid, for all those horrible thoughts and deeds that I had done. Now, I mean, I was a kid that would like go off to school, not really socialize. I'd walk around with my head bowed in campus because I didn't want to be picked on. And I knew that I didn't want to be seen associating with you, because if I was associating with you, then your friends would walk up to you and go like, oh my God, I saw you talking to Terrell. Oh my God, we can't talk to you anymore because you're now got whatever cooties. So that's where I came from. And so I kind of figure like, okay, well, my punishment from God, because God's all powerful, is to be fat and to have these alcoholic parents. But I did take the suggested food plan, which is on a gray sheet of paper back then, which is very similar probably to how. So I'm not a how member, but I guess it doesn't make any difference because you asked me to speak here. I said I took the gray sheet of paper, and I lost about 150 pounds, 125 pounds in about 6 months. Because I was a 17-year-old boy, and I went from binging to eating two eggs and an orange for breakfast and working at a shipping and loading dock, right? All summer long between college and high school. So that's a lot of physical exercise and a lot of lower calories. So I lost the weight. Then I kind of got a bit of a nat. I got kind of, things changed when I lost all that weight. People started paying attention to me, which caused me to have resentment. Right? Because you didn't talk to me like 6 months ago, you weren't talking to me. Now you're talking to me. It also caused me to have something called vanity, right? It also caused me to have something called fear, because oh my God, I'm getting this attention. I'm used to the attention of like you Terrell the barrel, but now I'm getting different attention. So, we're very clear in OA that says if you do not deal with those things that makes us seek excess food, we will go back and seek excess food. So that's what I had to do. I had to go back out, and I got back up to about 250 pounds. So I got down to like 175, and then basically over the next year and a half, I put on 75 pounds, bragging about how I can lose weight anytime I want. I've lost over 100 pounds. I can lose weight anytime I want as I'm going up in weight. And so I was keeping a journal in college, and the upper left-hand corner was the date, upper right-hand corner was my weight, because that would determine the day, right? My weight determined the day. What happened was I dealt with some of those deep, dark secrets I couldn't tell another living soul. The reason why I couldn't get a sponsor the first time around is that I came out of the closet. And when I came out of the closet, I always like to include this in my story because it's really part of my story, is that it was before I came out, they said, Terrell, if you lose the weight, you'll get the girls. I was like, okay. Well, after I came out, they said, if you lose the weight, you'll get the boys. And I thought, well, now, okay, that's some incentive there, right? You know, I guess maybe I was trying, maybe switch one addiction or the other. I don't know. But I thought maybe I would get something that I wanted. And also when I was coming out, it was a very nervous racking process. It was 1976. And so I was like in this nervous stomach and I couldn't eat. And you folks taught me one thing. Because the first time I came in, when I lost the weight the first time, I was going to for a meeting a week, whether I needed it or not, just for moral support and encouragement. It made me feel good. So I went to a meeting a week. And I like to say that was my tourism stage. I became a tourist in OA, not a member, but just a tourist visiting, like, you know, sampling what the local culture is like. And so one thing I really learned the first time around was it's not the 100th bite that puts the weight on, it's the first. So I discovered I didn't take that first bite all day long. I was safe from food. And so I discovered the wonderful world of fasting, thanks to Overeaters Anonymous, thanks to also into Sonoma State, which you might know of that. It was a very, back then it was called Granola U, and it was very, you know, so anyway. And so I just didn't eat. And during this nervous stomach process, I would go around to everyone asking everyone I knew or that I talked to in this way, was I said, do you think I'm gay? What do you think? Do you think I'm gay? What do you think? And I was asking everyone around me if they thought I was gay. Now, that is part of an OA story, because I'm gay, but I had to ask everyone else to make sure if it was okay with them for me to be who I am. And that's that stinking thinking as an addict that I need to go, like, I got to make sure you're all okay with it. If you're not okay with it, then I can't be okay with it. But if you're all okay with it, then I'm okay with it. And so I came out and I maintained my weight. I lost the weight that I put on. And I was maintaining my weight at roughly 160 pounds on what I call my donut diet, which I didn't eat anything all day long. Except maybe a small salad or something, just very light nosh. Nothing to kick in the addiction. And then at 2 o'clock in the morning, as I was driving home from the discotheque, I would stop and get nine or 10 donuts. Never a dozen, because if you order a dozen donuts, you're a compulsive overeater. But if you order 9 or 10, you're not a compulsive overeater. And I should also clarify, they really weren't donuts, because when I'm in my disease, I have something called financial insecurity, and also a sense of lack and deprivation. So I didn't order food that had holes in it. So I would never order donuts, and I never ate Swiss cheese because part of the cheese was missing. Now, that I know that sounds kind of crazy, but maybe some people in this room might understand that concept. Like, geez, Swiss cheese, no, there's, you know, I wanted it, like, anyway. So that's how I dealt with all the rejection and so forth. I felt by standing in this dark corner of a discotheque, afraid to move my little finger, because if I move my little finger, someone would walk up to me and say, fat boy, what are you doing here? Look at you. You're too fat and you're too ugly. Go home. Now, I'm 160 pounds, and you saw the boat picture. I wasn't ugly, but that's my thinking. So how do I deal with that thinking? How do I quiet it up here? As I went and got donuts, right? And then I wake up the next morning swearing I'm never going to do that again. And then I might, that night, drive by the donut stand and not stop and get the donuts. And I'd say, victory over food. I have victory over food. Now, normal people do not talk about having victory over food, right? It's just not their concept. What happened was I was maintaining my weight, though, and God bless the newcomer, because a newcomer came to me once and said, Terrell, if the donut diet was working, why'd you stop? And I could just kind of just chuckle and go, like, you know, well, keep coming back, darling, because the reason why I stopped the donut diet was because I was insane. Right? I was insane. I was crazier than ketchup. It was insane. And so I was being fitted for contact lenses before I went out for a European trip. And this is back in the days when you go and get prescription. They would send out for the contact lens. You come back a week or two later, and then they would give you your contact lens. I, after several attempts by my eye doctor, the one who operated my eyes, couldn't get my prescription right. You couldn't get it right. He said, Terrell, is there a history of hypoglycemia or diabetes in your family? And I said, yes. He said, Terrell, are you eating sugar? And, you know, when you get a question like that, there's only one thing we do when we get asked about our food, and that is we lie. And I said, a little. Because 9 or 10 donuts is not a lot of sugar. A 3-pound box of See's chocolate, now that's a lot of sugar, right? That's when I call it the chemistry work, where you gotta go like, okay, I get some protein in me so I can keep it, so I can get more sugar in me. Then I've got to put some bread in me or something like that so I can keep the binge going. That's what my chemistry work was about, to keep the binge going, because I wasn't fixed yet. I wasn't numbed out yet. I needed more, right? So I had to get enough food in me to make it to, you know, got it 5 minutes. And so I literally, he said, well, Terrell, if you don't stop eating sugar, you'll be blind within a year. And I then went to Europe and put on 30 pounds in 6 weeks, binge my way through Europe. And I remember while I was binging my way through Europe, I was going like, in my head, I was thinking, I can still see when things start to go gray, that's when I'll stop. And that's the insanity. So if you don't think I'm a compulsive overeater, because I might not look like one, I'm willing to sacrifice my eyesight for chocolate. And so I came back and I went back to Overeaters Anonymous. I got desperate enough. And and I started attending meetings. I found out there was a meeting every night at the Gay and Lesbian Service Center. So I was going to meetings every night. I had a spiritual experience where I was walking from after a meeting through a park, and I heard this small, still voice inside me. It says, Terrell, you're going to be all right. I love you. You have as much right to be here as that tree. It was the first time in my life I felt like I wasn't breathing your air, that I had a right to be on the planet Earth. And that was my spiritual experience. A couple of weeks after that, or maybe a month or so after that, I had lost the weight I gained in Europe. And I went to my sponsor and said, you know, I'm sick and tired of going to this room full of fat ass people talking about their problems. I'm sick and tired of being told what I can and cannot eat, when I can and cannot eat. I want to go live my life. I'm going to be out living, I'll be out dancing with the boys in Palm Springs. On a Friday night, I'm going to be sitting in some damn meeting at Cedars-Sinai Hospital. And I was done. And I was leaving you folks. And he said some magic words. He said, Terrell, remember, you're leaving us. We're not leaving you. If you ever want to come back, we'll be here. My attitude was, thank you for sharing. So I stayed absent for about a couple more weeks. Then on January 5th, 1979, I broke my absence on 2 pieces of toast. And that's my last binge. I'm hopelessly addicted to sugar and flour. I know that. That's the reason why I'm a donut junkie, because it takes sugar, which amps me up, and flour, which brings me down. So it's in drug terms, it's called a speedball. You mix it together, and it doesn't get you too high. It doesn't get you too low. It just makes you, it flattens you out. The problem with being flattened out is you don't get to cherry pick which feelings you want to get rid of. I got rid of the highs, the lows, the middles. I got rid of everything. Right. So there's not a lot of joy. There's not a lot of happiness, because it took it. The food robbed that all of me. And so on January 5th, I broke the absence, and I was told the door was always swinging up, and never know if the door will swing back in. And the door just swung out, and I got scared. I said, please, God, I cannot do it one more time. I cannot do it one more time. Please help me. So on January, I went to bed, and on January 6th, 1979, I woke up and have been absent ever since. And I love to say that Jimmy Carter was president when I got abstinent. So that shows you how long ago it was. What I was talking about when I can't do it one more time was literally, it wasn't about weight, because I maintained my weight at the donut diet. It was about, I cannot do the binge. I cannot go with the crazy and the insanity. You piece of shit. What the f-? Like, and wake up in the morning with the coated tongue and just hating myself, and that all that stuff that comes with the binge. It's not the weight. The weight is a symptom. I loved when I do retreats and I say, give them a writing assignment. I like to tell people, write down what food did to you without using the word weight or body size. Because that to me is the focus of this program. If it was the focus of the program was a body size, you could go to any Weight Watcher program or weight loss program and deal with the body size. But here we say, it's your stinking thinking. We have to change our thinking. We have to wash your brain. We have to do whatever. And that's the joy of this program. I guess I've got about a minute or two to talk about. I mean, I could talk about 44 years, But that's how, I mean, you know, I found out I was HIV positive. I've seen through that. My sister died, who was one of the most important person in my life. I've seen through that. I've seen through my grandmother dying. I've seen through moving. I've seen through losing jobs. I've seen everything, because nothing is more important than my absence. Now, today, I should tell you what my life is like today, because this is after 44 years. I own a condo in Puerto Vallarta. I also maintain an apartment in West Hollywood. But I have an amazing ocean view. My people tell me that they're envious of my life. I'm self-employed because I said a little prayer. I said, God, I'm spending more money than I'm making. You got to help me make more money. I'm willing to go wait tables. Somehow I wound up creating my own business. This is not a gift of the program. The program never promises you'll have your own business. The program never promises me a condo in Puerto Vallarta. What happened is the program said, taught me how to say yes to life, how to embrace life, how to open up. Because when I'm binging, it's very tight like this. Like, I'm living in fear, constant state of fear. What will you think of me? Did I make the right decision? I've learned to say yes to life. This today, I booked a 23-day cruise with my neighbors next year in Puerto Vallarta, which is me incorporating into a group of friends at my age. You know, it started off with me feeling like the new kid on the schoolyard. You know, we're like, all these neighbors were kind of like, oh, they're in that cool group, the clique. They're wanting me to join them. I'm going to go to Europe this summer. I'm going to spend 4 months in Europe this summer, traveling around with friends and working. I mean, that's the life I have today. But that's if I was not absent, I would say no. I would say no to these adventures. I'm still scared. Like, I'm going to be traveling a little bit in Europe by myself. It's kind of scary, but guess what? I can do this. I've discovered a power greater than myself, and that I can now have faith and trust that my higher power will take care of me. And by the way, I'm an atheist. So my higher power is peace, love, kindness, hope, patience, trust, acceptance, gratitude, and laughter. And that's what I turn my will, my life over to care of today. And that I find peace. And that's my time is up. Thanks for letting me share.